Irene awoke with a start. She felt around the cot for her son, but he was nowhere to be found. She moved to the door. Her heart raced. Where was her boy? Where was everyone? Normally, villagers walked up and down this street at all hours. She jumped and looked to her right, where a giant, slobbering wolf climbed down the roof of her neighbor's hovel, cornering the man on his porch. It was a true beast, with a spine that arched menacingly and claws that tore the straw from the thatch roof. Blood splattered onto her face. The wolf tore her neighbor to pieces. Her survival instincts kicking in, her only thought was to find her son. She headed for the pasture. She managed to leave the city, making her way through the tall grass of the mountainside. Irene frowned as she stepped in something soft and warm. Stooping down, she began to part the grass. Her eyes widened. Her mouth dropped. She screamed in terror. If only he hadn't lied. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today I'm sharing the story of The Boy Who Cried Wolf, one of the most famous of Aesop's fables told to children across the globe. Today's episode follows the original Greek story, written around 600 BC. As fables are short, we've added some context to the story based on what life for a shepherd would have been like in ancient times. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. Many of you have asked how to help the show. If you enjoy Tales, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. We know very little about Aesop, the historical figure. Greek historian Herodotus claims he was born in 620 BC, dying half a century later. Many legends claim Aesop was hideous at birth, Quasimodo times two. He was born a slave and incapable of speaking. But after showing great kindness to an Egyptian priestess, she blessed him with speech, leading to his penchant for storytelling. Aesop is then said to have traveled the Mediterranean, serving in many a royal court and often outsmarting his various masters. The life of Aesop, real or not, served as a beacon of hope to slaves throughout the ancient world. That is, unless they read to the end of the story, where Aesop tells an insulting fable and is thrown from a cliff by an angry mob. But if anything, this death merely showcases the power of Aesop's storytelling. His fables, or short morality tales, point out simple truths that even adults find difficult to live by. As is the case with The Boy Who Cried Wolf. This tale, written in the 6th century BC, is among the oldest of Aesop's 725 fables. And though today it's considered a children's story, the original version was anything but. Stupid sheep. All they did was eat, fight, and run away. Everyone always assumed they were such docile, ignorant creatures. And they were definitely stupid, but they were anything but docile. That gust of wind just now had sent them all reeling, as if Zeus himself had swooped down to strike them with a lightning bolt. Lycos had never been a fit boy. He had a belly for as long as he could remember. Now that he was 18, he had hoped joining the army would change that. But his mother was afraid of losing him, and General Doxus thought him unfit for the war against the Spartans. So he continued to mind the town flock, as he always had. Lycos arrived in town, trying to guide his sheep to their pen. It was all he could do to avoid losing one or knocking over a fellow villager. As he made his way down the street, Babrius and Phaedrus stopped their practice fighting to mock Lycos.
"Oh, look, Phaedrus, it's the sheep boy. Important job right there. Takes a real man to do that.
Babrius snorted. Tough guy, protecting sheep all day. It's not like us two don't have to go to actual war against the greatest army Greece has ever known. Both boys collapsed into fits of laughter. Lykos tried to pay them no mind. Mother always said that no job was more important than shepherding. She tried to tell him how his sheep gave the village fleece, milk, and meat.
Sheep are the lifeblood of our society, she would always chirp.
But there would be no society if the Spartans won. Babrius and Phaedrus got to protect the village, not just feed it. They were real men. People respected them. Lykos's ears perked up at the sound of danger. Perhaps he could be of assistance. Perhaps this was his chance to prove his strength to the village. Leaving everything, including the sheep, Lykos raced toward the sound. He leapt over a passing cart, slipped through an alley, and climbed the side of a building to reach the noise. Much to his dismay, upon arriving at the scene, he found that even his quick footwork wasn't enough. A large crowd had already gathered. All that was left for Lykos to do was watch. A processional of soldiers was coming up the stairs of a tenement, carrying a stretcher. Upon that stretcher lay Kleon, a young man who had grown up with Lykos. He was recognizable only by his hair and one remaining eye. The left side of his face had been cleaved open by a Spartan sword. His mother followed the men inside, and soon the processional continued behind a closed door. Lykos gulped at the thought of that one remaining eye, staring out, cold. It was familiar, but a mockery of that familiarity. Barely anything left of the boy Lykos had known.
Hey you! Get down from there!
Lykos jumped and looked down to see General Doxus glaring at him from the street. He climbed down.
Sorry, sir, mumbled Lykos. I know climbing's dangerous.
If you die, who's gonna watch the sheep?
Doxus growled. Lykos turned red out of both embarrassment and anger, quickly racing down the nearest alley in the direction of his sheep. Luckily, the sheep hadn't gone far. Lykos recovered them from nearby alleys and herded them into the pen next to the house. After spending another 2 hours brushing each sheep and giving them some water, he quietly entered his home to find his mother cooking at the fire. Despite his stepping lightly, she turned around swiftly. She immediately ran toward him, slapping him in the face.
I saw General Doxus in the market, said the sheep were running about all over the street.
She screamed. Lykos shrugged. He tried to explain about Kleon, but his mother wouldn't have any of it.
You'll end up just like him if I catch you behaving so irresponsibly again with our livelihood.
She breathed heavily, glaring at him for another few moments. But then her expression suddenly changed. Her eyes filled with tears. She snatched him up, holding him close to her bosom. She swore she'd never let him go to war. She didn't want him to end up like Kleon. Mother had always been quick to change tempers. That night, Kleon's body was committed to the underworld. The priestesses placed coins on his eyes so that he could pay the ferryman, and he was left with his cracked helmet and worn shield. Lykos gulped upon realizing that the Spartan that killed Kleon had been strong enough to swing his sword through both helmet and skull. But Lykos thought this was all rather a lot of fanfare for a dead boy. Lykos was alive, right here, and no one seemed to care a lick for him. He bet he would last longer in battle than Kleon had. He bet Kleon wouldn't have even been half as good as Lykos at wrangling sheep. General Doxus wept over Kleon's body.
He was such a good soldier, such a strong lad.
All a soldier had to do to get noticed was have some Spartan come along and split him in two. Shepherds were completely ignored. They gathered that night at the Capileia to celebrate the dead. Lykos just sulked in the corner. He couldn't help but overhear Babrius and Phaedrus bragging at a nearby fire.
I've already killed 5 Spartans,
said Babrius.
I've not killed any yet, but I warned the general about some ships coming round the bay,
chirped Phaedrus.
Lycos could hardly contain his anger. Neither boy had any wartime accomplishments to speak of. They could barely beat one another in a sparring match, let alone match an elite Spartan hoplite. And yet, the young women listening to the duo were soaking up every word of their story. It seemed veracity, at least in this social circle, was unnecessary. But if those idiots could convince girls that they were warriors, the idea hit him like a ram between the legs. That's it. If they wouldn't give him a chance to be a hero, then he would just have to make himself into one. He had everything worked out in his head. No one would ever think twice about his story. He brought the sheep up into the cliffs. It was harder during the night, but Lycos knew the way well. Once they had reached a satisfactory height, it was time. Leaning down toward the nearest sheep, he prepared himself. He opened his mouth wide and bit into the sheep's side. As the sheep ran back down toward the town, Lycos cupped his hands around his mouth, shouting, "Wolf! Wolf!" Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, back to tales. Lycos had to scream a few more times, but the village finally started to stir. Torches were lit and the alarms began to clang. Moving quickly, Lycos bit hard into his own hand. He dashed his knees against a rock, drew his fingernails across his arms. When the soldiers and villagers finally found him, he was quite a sight. General Doxus himself was first up the ridge.
"Gods, he's here! Bring a healer!"
The man kneeled next to Lycos, showing more concern than he ever had before.
"Just lay still, boy. The priestess will have a look at you."
Lycos realized it would be better if the priestess didn't look so closely. Slowly, he got to his feet, wincing as he did so, holding his side.
No, sir. I'm fine, really. I think I drove him off."
The general was immediately impressed.
"Not many of my men would be brave enough to take on a wolf by themselves. Good on you, lad."
The general clapped Lycos on the back. He smiled back, while remembering to continue to wince. Lycos's mother was next up the ridge, blubbering predictably. She slapped him, as always, but then hugged him close, as always.
"Stupid boy! You should know better than to fight a beast!"
He pushed her away, puffing his chest out, and watching General Doxus out of the corner of his eye.
"It was my duty, mother. Our sheep are the lifeblood of the town."
General Doxus had called a meeting, inviting all the townsfolk to convene in the Capilea and discuss the night's events.
"It would seem," he bellowed, "that on top of our Spartan problem, we've now got wolves to contend with."
General Doxus called for order. Though wolves hadn't been sighted near the town in years, he had heard reports of the Spartans burning the forests to the south. It made sense that some animals might begin migrating north. They were lucky that Lycos had sprung into action as he did, lest the wolf hurt the sheep, or worse, come into town.
"Sheep boy fought off a wolf all by himself?"
Babrius' question came from the front row. Phaedrus was next to him, as always.
"I don't believe that for a moment," he said.
The general motioned for Lycos, who moved to the front of the room. He lifted his arms, showing the scratches, lifted up his tunic, revealing his bloodied knees, turned his hand, showing the bite.
"I only wish I could have kept him from biting poor Sophia, my favorite sheep."
Lycos bowed his head. Everyone did the same out of respect. Sophia was fine, but they didn't need to know that. His mother fell apart all over again, running from the room. Babrius just crossed his arms, sitting back, unbelieving. It was time, the general said, to
to restart the town watch. Not only were the Spartans growing closer every day, but a regular patrol would prevent any wolves from attacking the town. He would need to assign a captain. General Doxus turned to Lykos, wrapping a blue cloak around his shoulders. Lykos couldn't believe his luck. The lie had worked perfectly. No one besides Babrius had even begun to question him. It was all he could do to keep from tearing up as General Doxus clasped the cloak with the official pin of the town guard. General Doxus stepped to the side.
I present our new town watch captain.
Everyone, besides Babrius and Phaedrus, rose to their feet in applause. Several girls in the back of the room waved at him. Finally, Lykos was being recognized for his contributions. Who cared if he had to lie a little bit to get here? No one would ever know. The village hosted a morning feast in Lykos's honor, with many a fine maiden toasting his accomplishment. As Lykos enjoyed his meal, Babrius stumbled over, clearly intoxicated.
I should be a captain, not you, he scorned. This town's never had a sheep boy protect it. It's nonsense.
Maybe it's about time, replied Lykos.
Before Babrius could reply, General Doxus walked over, and both boys snapped to attention.
Come, Lykos, he said. We have much to discuss.
Lykos walked proudly behind General Doxus, throwing a victorious look in the direction of Babrius. They made their way outside, passing through the market to arrive at the fortress where a strange man awaited them. He was dirty, covered in mud, and gods knew what else. His clothing was in a similar state, consisting of layer upon layer of animal pelt. On his back was a giant bow. General Doxus explained that the man was a hunter, an expert brought in from Triphilia. He spent so much time in the woods hunting that he had forgotten his own name. Lykos swallowed hard at this revelation. He didn't like where this was going. General Doxus went on to explain that the hunter would assist in tracking the wolves with the nightly patrols, but first he wanted to see the injured sheep so as to ascertain what sort of beast they were dealing with. Lykos just stood there, frozen, unsure of what to say. Finally, he managed to sputter out a question.
Have you hunted many wolves, sir?
The hunter nodded grimly, and for the first time, he spoke.
I know wolves.
He went on, telling tales of every wolf he had ever slain. He spoke of their eyes, which could be yellow like the sun, or icy blue like winter. How you never saw them coming, or knew how many there were until they were already upon you. How once they tasted blood, they wouldn't stop attacking until you or they were dead.
Good thing we've got Captain Lykos here to protect us,
beamed General Doxus. He patted Lykos on the back again and implored him to bring the hunter to see Sophia the sheep. Lykos scrambled to come up with a way to fool the hunter, but he knew there would be no fooling such a man. All he could do was point Sophia out to him in her pen and wait for his deception to be revealed. The hunter crouched next to the sheep, lifting her leg up, pushing her wool aside, and examining her bite mark. He rubbed his chin, contemplating. Sophia let out a casual wail, as if she were trying to tell the real story of what had happened. Lykos smacked her over the head.
Shut up, Sophia.
The hunter stood upright, turning to the other two men. Lykos waited anxiously for his assessment. Pulling out some jerky, the hunter bit off a piece, chewing loudly.
Well? Questioned General Doxus.
The hunter swallowed the jerky, finally replying,
You got a real mean one, I'd reckon.
Lykos could hardly believe his ears. This man was an idiot. He wouldn't reveal anything. The hunter went on to say that regular patrols absolutely would be necessary, and that he'd begin tracking the beast that very night. This presented a problem for Lykos. If the man searched and found nothing, then once again people might begin to question Lykos' story. There had to be additional evidence of the wolf. That night, Lykos slipped away from his town watch duties, returning to the pen outside of his mother's house. He fired up the furnace, getting the coals blazing hot. He heated up the brand, which contained a magic symbol at its tip, used to protect the sheep from harm. Lykos intended to use it for the opposite. Pulling pliers from his tool crate, he began to twist and reshape the now molten symbol. Its curves and points became a central pad with four clawed toes. Lykos thought he might make an excellent blacksmith, but that was extremely hard work, so he wasn't particularly interested. Laying over the top railing so that his feet didn't touch outside of the pen, he pressed the brand into the mud, creating a fake wolf trail leading up to the sheep. Once he was satisfied, he turned to his least favorite sheep, Sophia. She resisted his grasp, but had nowhere left to run. Pulling at the same leg where he had bit her the previous night, Lykos took the brand and, turning it around to the point end, drove it deep into her leg. He felt a little bad as he pulled the brand out and brought it down again into her leg, so as to simulate a fang bite. Then again, he felt a little less guilty when he thought of all the times he'd had to chase a frightened Sophia across the pasture. Quickly washing the poker off in the mud, he doused the furnace and began to scale the side of the house, sneaking over the roof and jumping down to the other side of the home. With his ruse complete, he ran to the nearest gate in town. Of course, Babrius and Phaedrus were on guard duty. He called out to both.
"Quickly! To the sheep pen at once! Wolf! Wolf!"
His claim was immediately met with skeptical faces, but the other boys knew that he now outranked them.
"All right then, Captain,"
Babrius reluctantly answered. They hurried after him, with Phaedrus breaking off to alert the rest of the guard. Everyone gathered around the sheep pen, though once the hunter arrived, he quickly shooed them away. He examined the area around the pen, immediately finding the fake wolf tracks. He got close, actually sniffing them, before climbing into the pen and searching the sheep. Amongst the flock, he found the body of Sophia, who Lykos was surprised to see had bled out and now lay dead on her side. The hunter poked and prodded her injury, sniffed it again, and turned to address the guard.
"Looks like the same nasty little wolf as before."
We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now let's continue our story. Lykos was somehow even more revered after the second attack, being given a garrison under his command to actively track the wolf with. The hunter was to tag along as well. Lykos' mother, of course, protested, but Doxus was thoroughly convinced of the threat and felt Lykos was the man for the job. As they made their way through the thick forest south of the city, Lykos pondered his next move. He couldn't keep staging wolf attacks forever. Or could he? It's not as if the town was full of geniuses. Babrius complained behind him.
"We've been stomping through these woods all morning. The wolf's gone. Let's go home, Captain."
Babrius had an annoying habit of nearly always forgetting to address Lykos by his title.
"We press on until we find something," growled Lykos.
Ahead of them, the hunter moved about like he himself were a wolf, hopping from tree to tree, sniffing every root, leaf, or rock. Lykos was sure that this man must be a complete fraud. It was an impressive act, nonetheless. Credit where credit is due, thought Lykos. In fact, why not see what else he could put the hunter up to?
I'll search ahead a bit. The wolf might be avoiding our large garrison, said Lykos.
Babrius and Phaedrus eyed him with suspicion, but he paid them no mind. He slinked off into the forest. He emerged into a clearing, where he looked about for some material to work with. A large stump sat off to one side. Throwing caution to the wind, he threw himself on top of it, hard, dirtying his tunic. He next brought back an old favorite, raking his nails across his arms. Finally, he used a stone to carve claw marks into the stump. Satisfied, he cupped his hands to his mouth, opened his lips, and Lykos jumped, turning to find none other than the hunter behind him, watching with great interest. Lykos tried to cover.
What do you... I gave no order to follow.
The hunter smiled, revealing a series of surprisingly clean teeth.
Fresh scratches on your arm. Fight off another wolf, did you?
He moved close to Lykos, who tried to remain calm. Lykos sputtered out a reply.
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it would seem...
The hunter held up a hand.
Shoulda stopped after the second time, kid. Ain't no one gonna believe you a third.
Lykos turned bright red.
And what kind of hunter are you to not even be able to tell a fake attack until...
Lykos's heart sank as none other than General Doxus entered the clearing, followed by the garrison. Doxus marched forward angrily. Lykos winced, sure he was about to be struck down. Instead, Doxus reached for the clasp on his cloak, yanking it loose. Doxus explained that the hunter was no fraud, but recognized from the beginning that the bite marks and later stab wounds on Sophia were fake. He had correctly guessed that Lykos was staging the attacks for personal gain, and today's mission had merely been a ruse to prove it. Behind the general, Babrius and Phaedrus were grinning ear to ear.
"Return home to your sheep, boy," said Doxus. "Count yourself lucky we don't administer a harsher punishment for this deception."
With no other options left to him, Lykos did as he was told, returning from the woods a shepherd once again. Returning to his mother, he expected a slap, but received none. It was just the hug this time. He woke early the next morning. His soul hurt more than his aching back. As he guided his sheep through town, he caught more than a few rude glances. The girls from the Capilea now paid him no mind. Cleon's mother was in the market. Her stare hurt the most. And of course, Babrius and Phaedrus were at their usual place along his route.
"There goes Sheep Boy, back to what he does best," shouted Babrius.
"Looking good, Sheep Boy," laughed Phaedrus.
Lykos paid them no mind, continuing toward the fields. It was another beautiful spring day. The sea bristled as if alive with diamonds. The wind tussled his hair. Of course, this meant the sheep were now beginning to scare. Rather than grow angry, he nestled up against a rock and removed his khalil from his bag. He began to play a melody to calm the sheep. Immediately, the sheep calmed, ceasing their panic and returning to grazing. Lykos continued playing. He stopped, looked about, thought he heard something, but the sheep were still calm. He decided to continue. He stopped once more. He definitely heard something. Perhaps there was a sheep stuck in the brush? Getting up, he walked through the grass toward the tree line. He reached the trees and, parting some bushes, he fell back into the grass. No, but that was impossible. A real wolf? It was huge, the size of a lion, with teeth like chunks of granite. Then he remembered. The only reason Doxus believed Lycos' original claim was because there had been reports of wolves migrating north as the Spartans burned the forest. There was truth to the concern after all. Scrambling to his feet, Lycos had just enough time to turn toward the town and scream,
"Wolf! Wolf!"
He turned back to see several more wolves emerge from the forest. Back at the market, Babrius and Phaedrus heard Lycos' voice on the wind. They looked to one another, then burst out laughing.
"He really thinks we'll fall for that,"
Babrius giggled.
"Almost as sad as it is funny,"
chortled Phaedrus. They rolled on the floor in hysterics. Irene, Lycos' mother, awoke with a start. Something was wrong in the village, but where was Lycos? Irene hurried through the market, where she found the stalls and carts in disarray. She gasped as she found a woman with her throat torn out, her blood spreading slowly through the dirt. She thought she recognized her, the mother of the dead boy Cleon. Irene nearly vomited. She jumped, turning around to find a massive wolf, even bigger than the one at her neighbor's, extricating itself from a jar of olives. Irene immediately began to back away, hoping the beast wouldn't see her. Damn, she stumbled, catching herself on the wood of a nearby shop. Immediately, the wolf's head shot up, its icy blue eyes staring in her direction. It stalked toward her. With each step, it grew hungrier for her flesh. Saliva dangled from its mouth. Its massive tongue ran along its nose. Just as the creature was about to fall upon her, General Doxus appeared, growling, bringing his sword down into the beast's neck.
"Go!" he cried. "The wolves are everywhere. We've lost many. Find your son!"
They both turned to find several more wolves entering from the other side of the square. Letting out a fierce battle cry, Doxus raced to take them on. As Irene ran away toward the pasture, she heard the sounds of the veteran warrior behind her, fighting what was likely his last battle. Arriving at the mountainside, her foot found its way to something soft and wet on the ground. She parted the grass and met with horror as her eyes fell upon the body of a sheep. As she stepped back, she realized the bodies of all the sheep littered the ground, tucked beneath the grasses they used to graze. The wolves had slain them all. But she couldn't see Lycos. Stumbling forward, she found the edge of the cliff. And there, her worst fears were realized. She found her boy, her Lycos, sprawled out atop a rock below, his throat torn open, his blood dripping down and into the sea. Irene knew that the gods rewarded liars with the prize of never being trusted again, and she knew that when her boy cried out, claiming that wolves truly were attacking, that none would have believed him. His dishonesty had cost him the ability to warn the town. It had cost him a chance to be a true hero. The Boy Who Cried Wolf has endured as one of Aesop's most popular fables, though the initial tale is but five lines, ending in the boy's flock being decimated by wolves. Later versions went darker. By the 19th century, English and American poets included an ending where the boy himself was eaten by the wolf, and some versions, including ours, even have the wolves devouring the whole town. A lighter version of the story continues to be used as a cautionary tale against lying for today's children. One popular modern adaptation, Universal Pictures' 2002 film Big Fat Liar, features a young boy, Jason Shepard, who has his screenplay stolen by a vicious Hollywood executive, Marty Wolf. Because the boy is known for lying, No one believes him when he claims his idea was stolen. Regardless of the story version, the core moral always remains the same. Those who are known to be liars are believed by no one. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more episodes of Tales or Parcast podcasts, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. Some listeners have been asking how to help the show. Well, if you enjoy the show, the best way to do that is to leave a 5-star review. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.